Last week, the Michigan legislature adjourned without advancing a road funding agreement for the state. That means even more will be on their plate as we head into September. Besides Michigan roads, lawmakers are also mapping out the future of energy in our state. The debate over what that future will look like was also in the spotlight last week. A Senate bill that would change how homes with solar panels pay for electricity has come under fire from advocates who say it's unfair to people who've already invested in rooftop solar. But supporters of the bill say other customers should not have to subsidize their neighbor's electricity bill. Here to talk about that issue and how it fits into the debate over Michigan's energy future is reporter Emily Lawler, who's been covering the issue for MLive and a regular visitor to Current State. Welcome back, Emily.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So this bill in the Senate right now would make some major changes to how people with rooftop solar panels connect to the electric grid. Can you briefly walk through this for us? What changes are we talking about?
Well, let me start with what we do right now, which is a process called net metering. And if you have solar panels on your house, Mark, what would happen is that you would use that energy from the solar panels. Say you used overall 500 kilowatts that month and you generated 300 of those yourself, then you'd only pay for 200 from the electric company.
Mm-hmm.
And what this process would do is a little bit different. Under this bill, you would use the 500 kilowatts from the electric company, pay them for that, and then you'd basically sell the 300 kilowatts back at kind of a wholesale rate.
Okay, a discounted rate.
Well, you know, it's more like it's less than a full retail rate, which is what people get in exchange for their solar that they produce right now.
And who is throwing their support behind this bill, and what's their argument for this change?
Yeah, utility companies have come out pretty supportive of this, and along with some of the legislators who are pushing it, and some business groups that want reliable, cheap electricity. And their argument is pretty much one of fairness. You know, they say, why are we being forced to purchase energy right now from solar producers at retail rates, when if we produced it from a large installation or a company, it would be at wholesale rates.
Mm. Now, is the dispute involves, I take it, whether net metering amounts to an overly generous subsidy? Is that a fair way of putting it?
Yeah. And you know, there are people who want to just get all the subsidy out of it altogether, figure out what the true cost is for those people being able to feed into the grid, and have all the energy that we as ratepayers purchase from them be a direct reflection of exactly how much they're using the grid. So,
also, a lot of times in these kinds of arguments, you will hear that proponents, like supporters of the Senate bill, say something like, it's time to wean solar of subsidies. Are we hearing that here? I mean, solar's been around for a while. Are they saying things like, if it's of real value, it will endure without such a generous subsidy?
That's you must have been listening to them.
A free market kind of, well, it's a free market exactly. Kind of argument.
Well, yeah, and you know, Senator Knopf, who is the chair of the Senate Energy and Technology Committee, has been really adamant, not just in this part of the legislation, but throughout all of the legislation, of saying renewables have come down in price. They're competitive. Let's let them compete. Let's stop trying to subsidize mm-hmm. them. But for homeowners with solar, this really is the only, if you want to call it a subsidy, it's the only economic advantage you get. Any credits that people have gotten have been on the federal level, not the state level. So this net metering program, I talked to one solar installer who said 98% of the installations he does participate in net metering because it's more economically favorable than just having a solar panel.
Emily Lawler is a business and capital reporter for MLive. We're talking about the debate over solar power policies and lawmakers' plans for Michigan's energy future. A group called Citizens for Michigan's Energy Future has actually been driving around Lansing with mobile billboard trucks that say the bill is about encouraging solar without subsidies. Maybe some of our listeners have seen that. But while those trucks have been driving around, there is another side to this argument. It's really interesting. The people on the other side of the debate are claiming that the concerns that they're raising are very much worth merit. And some of these people appeared before the Senate Energy and Technology Committee just last week. What kinds of things were they saying?
Well, you know, I think one major point that they had was for the people who have already invested in solar, and it's not just individuals. There was a woman from a church who testified. Her church had put panels on a church roof. And, you know, people who have already invested don't want to see the system change because they invested knowing that they'd get a payoff in a certain amount of time, right? It would be worth their initial investment in, you know, say 5 years, 10 years. With this economic model, which is completely changing the way that they thought that they were going to be reimbursed for any excess power they might produce, it really lengthens that amount of payoff. I've heard people say up to 20 years for your initial investment to really come back at you.
Mm. There's an interesting analogy involving tomatoes that I have to bring up that you reported in your story. One of the opponents to the Senate bill, Amy Hart, spokesperson for the Alliance for Solar Choice, compared the situation to somebody with a garden. Right now, you might grow tomatoes, eat them, and sell the ones you don't eat. And this is very similar kind of layout to the current net metering landscape. The analogy would be if you couldn't eat your own tomatoes, you'd have to sell them at wholesale rates to the grocery store and then buy them back for full retail price. She says it eliminates the ability of customers to use their own energy. I'm quoting directly, cribbing directly from your article, Emily. Does she describe the situation accurately?
As far as I can read, I do think so. It's kind of an interesting comparison, and obviously a hit to salsa lovers everywhere because those backyard tomatoes are fueling it. But yeah, I mean, it really is a different structure. You know, people have said that it kind of eliminates net metering, and its truest sense and goes to an altogether different system. What it's called in the bill now is distributed generation. So,
how did the lawmakers in the committee last week meet? How did they respond to this opposition?
Yeah. Well, I've got to give a lot of credit to both the Senate Energy and Technology Committee and the House Energy Policy Committee that's been considering a different package that has to do with Michigan's energy future, because both committees have really shown a willingness to dig in and do this really methodically and thoughtfully. I thought the committee members had good questions, both for people who, you know, supported and did not support the net metering part of the legislation in particular. But the bill that this is in actually changes a lot of things. There's renewable portfolio standards to talk about, energy efficiency. So I imagine that they're going to have quite a few meetings on this, the next one of which happens this week.
While solar net metering might be attracting the most public attention, there are other debates that are a part of the larger energy debate here in Michigan. What are some of the other that rise to the top?
Yeah. Well, I'd say another one that's kind of got a free market angle is this debate over whether or not we should have a fully regulated utility market, which currently 10% of energy can be purchased from alternative energy suppliers, which means that even if you live in consumers or DTE territory, say, you could purchase it from another person, possibly at a cheaper rate. And there's a big movement from the utility companies and the utility lobby to do away with that completely, have us be completely regulated, and you have to purchase from whoever's territory you're in.
You mentioned that another key issue in this debate is what role renewables will play in Michigan's energy future. Back in 2008, of course, we passed the mandate that required the state to be getting 10% of its energy from renewable sources by 2015, and we are apparently going to hit that goal. But the big question is, what happens next? What are lawmakers proposing when it comes to renewable energy portfolio mandate?
There is a whole spectrum of proposals. I guess I'll start with the House Democrats and Senate Democrats have kind of come together around these energy principles, and they have legislation, and they want to up pretty drastically that number, that percentage of renewables. Currently, it has to be 10% by the end of 2015, which we're on the track to meet. But, you know, they'd like to see it be gradually increased to 20%, which would be interesting. And, you know, it sounds like, at least from the Michigan Public Service Commission, that it's feasible, but there's really no appetite for that on the Republican side that I've seen. The closest I've seen is maybe leaving the current 10% in, and, you know, other proposals are eliminating it altogether.
Mm. Back in March, of course, Governor Snyder unveiled his own energy plan. Does it differ significantly from what's being bantered about in the House and Senate right now?
You know, Governor Snyder has an advantage in that he doesn't have to write his plan down. So it's not in the form of actual legislation. So it is kind of hard to compare. There's that to consider. But he did put pretty big emphasis on renewables. He factored in the cost of natural gas, which is a cleaner burning fuel than coal that we're currently using. And, you know, he kind of had two scenarios that I think went up to 24 or 34%.
I was going to say, he's generally portrayed as quite receptive, if not out and out supportive, but receptive, I guess, to the idea of increasing that.
Yes. And he also put a big emphasis on reducing the overall amount of energy that we use through energy efficiency, which isn't as big of an emphasis in the House or Senate proposals right now.
Energy policy has gotten a lot of attention at the federal level recently as well. Earlier this month, the EPA released the final version of its Clean Power Plan, which would require states to significantly reduce greenhouse gas emissions. Are those regulations influencing the debate over energy in Michigan?
You know, interestingly, not as much as I thought. I had asked that question. And basically, people are kind of unsure. There's already a legal challenge to the rules that Attorney General Bill Schuette has signed on to. So there's that to consider. That could maybe push back the timing. But realistically, a proposed version of these rules has been around for a while, and power pump companies have been planning for it. So, you know, it really, I'm not sure that it demands as much legislative attention as it might have otherwise, but power companies really are kind of making their investments with that in mind, and have been for a couple years.
And with all of these considerations, Emily, what kind of timeline are we looking at when it comes to Michigan lawmakers actually passing significant energy legislation?
You know, they've said that they want to do it by the end of this year. That's also a timeline that the utility companies have asked for, is by the end of the year so that they have some certainty going forward. And the utilities also want to address what they say could be an energy shortfall in 2016. So, they'd like to address the regulated versus deregulated market specifically, but that's rolled into this whole larger package.
Emily Lawler of MLive is our guest. We're talking about the energy policy discussion here in Michigan. I want to ask you about a story you wrote on Friday, though, on a totally different topic. You reported on a Michigan State Police investigation that will look into more than a dozen state of Michigan email addresses that were discovered on the Ashley Madison website after it was recently hacked. What's happening?
So there were 17 total email addresses that ended in Michigan.gov, which is the standard for most state departments in the state of Michigan. MEDC is a little different because they're quasi-governmental, Michigan.org, and they did not have anyone on the list. But in any case, I had kind of asked if that was against the state's acceptable use policy. You're really not supposed to be using your state email address for personal use. Basically, being on the list doesn't necessarily mean that you're guilty. I could have signed up using your email address, for instance, and you wouldn't have had to verify that, and Ashley Madison wouldn't really know if it were you or if it were me. So, there's that to consider. These email addresses could have ended up on there in a myriad of ways. But I had asked the Michigan State Police if they had used it for investigative purposes. I thought that, there was a possibility that their detectives were using it to, in some way fight crime, and they basically said, no, that wouldn't be the case. There wouldn't be an investigative reason. So they'll be doing an administrative investigation specifically of the Michigan State Police personnel that were on the list.
We want to thank our guest, Emily Lawler. We've been talking about the debate surrounding the future of energy in Michigan and also the latest on the state of Michigan email addresses that were discovered on the Ashley Madison website. Emily, of course, reports for MLive. Many thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.